You're listening to Global IQ with Jim Falk. Today I'm with journalist and author Max Blumenthal, the author of Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel, published just last month. Max, thank you so much for joining me on this Global IQ Minute.
Great to be on with you.
Setting the stage, Secretary of State Kerry has already traveled 8 times to the region, and yet it appears that such little progress is being made. Do you believe, from your research and writing, that a two-state solution is even possible?
Well, John Kerry has just issued some of the most strongly worded statements about Israel's behavior since Jim Baker was Secretary of State under George H.W. Bush. And I think Kerry is learning some important lessons about Israeli politics and Israeli society and the nature of and its direction. Israel has changed dramatically even since Jim Baker was Secretary of State, and Kerry has been attacked by a leading member of Knesset, Orit Struck, who is affiliated with the Jewish Home Party, which occupies a leading role in Benjamin Netanyahu's coalition. She has accused him of being on the side of the terrorists.
And this is a right-wing?
This is a right-wing party which favors annexing the West Bank and is the third largest party in Israel right now. There are currently no members of the Israeli governing coalition who favor relinquishing any part of East Jerusalem for a future Palestinian capital. There is a consensus in the Israeli government right now that the Palestinian Authority must recognize Israel as a Jewish state, not just recognizing Israel as a legitimate country, but to recognize its ethnocratic character, which thereby will consolidate an institutional discrimination against 20% of Israel's population, which is Arab. And this makes the deal a non-starter. And the U.S. has endorsed this component of negotiations, which makes it nearly impossible. Meanwhile, there are almost 400,000 settlers in the West Bank, and under the U.S. deal, the Palestinian Authority will gain no control over borders, will gain no control over water rights, and where its aquifer is located, which supplies 85% of water to the West Bank, it's located right beneath the mega settlement of Ariel, which under a U.S.-led deal for a two-state solution will be incorporated into a future state of Israel. So there's really no plan for an actual Palestinian state, and there's no will within Israeli society or the political scene for the creation of such a state.
Well, having said that, do you see anything then that will drive the process forward in a favorable manner?
Well, the idea of two states needs to be abandoned completely at this point, and there needs to be fresh ideas put on the table, especially by people who are in the foreign policy establishment. They need to be looking at the idea of a confederation or a binational state, something that relieves the exclusion of millions of Palestinian refugees and the discrimination and denial of rights of millions of Palestinians who either live under occupation or within Israel proper.
Well, speaking of occupation, I saw this statistic, which surprised me. It was a Pew Research Center survey that said only 17% of American Jews believe that the continued building of settlements is helpful to Israel's security.
Right.
Yet, these settlements continue. That's certainly one issue, but looking at it realistically, how can we expect an Israeli political leader to handle, or how could he or she handle the withdrawal from these existing settlements?
I don't even know if we need to be looking at a withdrawal at this point. Those settlements are completely consolidated. Many of them are entire cities, and forcing people to leave their homes, as Palestinians are forced to do. Israel has marked the homes of 15,000 indigenous residents of Jerusalem for demolition, which will render them homeless. To do this to the settlers will create a new kind of crisis. So again, we have to look past the old discredited solutions and start looking at a binational state where the settlements no longer are Jewish-only towns but can actually be integrated so Palestinians can benefit from the contributions that Israel's made. And I want to make another point right now, because a lot of your listeners might not have heard about this, but it's incredibly important. Palestinian protests right now are centering around a plan inside the Green Line, inside Israel proper, that Israel has just finalized, which will require 40,000 Bedouins who are Israeli citizens to leave their homes. Their homes will be bulldozed, and they'll be moved into Indian reservation-style communities, and their communities will be replaced with Jewish-only towns inside Israel proper. It's called the Praver Plan, P-R-A-W-E-R. It's named after Netanyahu's policy and planning advisor, Ehud Praver.
Well, that's certainly something that we need to look more into. And what are, in your view, two or three of the major misconceptions Americans may have about Israel today?
The major misconception is that Israel is a democracy. A democracy provides equal rights and benefits to all its citizens, regardless of their ethnicity or religion. Israeli citizenship is... Actually, there's no such thing as Israeli citizenship. 2 weeks ago, the Israeli Supreme Court ruled that citizenship has to be provided according to ethnicity, either Jewish or Arab. And if you're Arab inside Israel, you're unable to get building permits, you can't get permits to renovate your home, you are discriminated against on a legal basis. And under various plans offered by the Israeli government, you may have to leave your home and be stripped of your citizenship. Your speech is limited, you're monitored by the Shin Bet, Israel's General Security Service, and your loyalty is constantly called into question. Meanwhile, people who have legitimate land claims inside Israel are not allowed to return to their land. My friends who are Palestinian American who are working in Ramallah for NGOs are unable to go to the beach in Israel simply because they're not of the right ethnicity, and they ask me to sneak them in. They live under Israeli control, and so this is undemocratic to me. It's really an ethnocracy. For Jewish citizens of Israel, it is a true democracy, and they receive benefits we don't even receive in the United States. But for non-Jews, your future is constantly called into question as simply as a resident inside territory controlled by Israel.
Max, let's talk about another part of the world that's certainly been generating a lot of headlines, and that's Iran. Prime Minister Netanyahu has said that the potential weaponization of nuclear weapons in Iran is an existential threat to Israel's security. New York Times columnist Roger Cohen wrote a piece just recently, received a great deal of criticism for it, when he wrote that the Israeli Prime Minister needs to stop calling Iranian President Rouhani a wolf in sheep's clothing and start worrying about crying wolf. How should President Obama then address the political fallout occurring, his efforts to create an overture of relations with Iran?
Well, I think this is an important deal for the U.S. to close. I had enormous issues with the sanctions regime applied against Iran, which actually sanctioned civilian airplane parts and wrecked the entire economy instead of targeting the nuclear program. But here we are with the chance for a breakthrough deal with Iran that would benefit the U.S., which the EU, every country in the EU except France for some reason, wants to close. There's an international consensus that this deal has to be made, and there's a new administration in Iran that's offered a window for a deal that was unprecedented when Ahmadinejad was in power. So the key obstruction to this deal are two countries which are major U.S. allies, Saudi Arabia and Israel under Benjamin Netanyahu. There are actually people in the military intelligence apparatus in Israel who oppose Netanyahu on this, but Netanyahu is putting up an obstruction. And the reason isn't that he fears that Iran will obtain nuclear weapons that will destroy Israel. This just I don't take this seriously. Israel has second strike nuclear capacity, which means that it could launch a second nuclear strike against Iran that would obliterate Iran even if Iran struck Israel. And there's no indication Iran even has a nuclear weapons program, but this deal would kind of put an end to its nuclear weapons program altogether. What Netanyahu fears is that if Iran is able to obtain breakout capacity, that Israeli Jews who are already leaving in droves from his country, there are currently 600,000 to 1 million Israeli Jews, will buy into the fear that he's stirred up so much that they will increasingly leave, especially the intelligentsia, because they don't want to live in fear.
Do you think that these negotiations that are ongoing increase the likelihood that Israel may make a preemptive strike?
I think Israel doesn't have the military capacity for a preemptive strike because it requires in-air refueling. Israel's attempted to acquire bases under the radar in Azerbaijan, which would allow it to launch from its bombers from a location that is within range of Iranian nuclear facilities. But even if they were able to do that, they don't have the armaments to bust Iranian heavily fortified nuclear facilities, which are deep underground, and they have actually asked the U.S. for tactical nuclear weapons to do it, which would require, so this would actually require a nuclear strike. It would be a tactical nuclear strike, not like a Hiroshima-style nuclear strike, but it would require a nuclear strike inside Iran if Israel wanted to launch a preemptive strike. Just consider the regional consequences of this, and consider the fact that there are U.S. troops in the region.
I wish we had more time, but we don't. And as our conversation draws to a close, let me just ask you this. Your book is now ranked number 3 on Amazon's list in history on books about Israel. Yet, in searching for book reviews, few have appeared in the mainstream media. Does this surprise you? Did you expect it? And how have your efforts gone to publicize your book?
Thanks for that question. My book was number 1 on Amazon in the Israel category for 2 weeks without any mainstream attention. And the other books in this category are getting, you know, heavily reviewed, and they're getting bulk bought also by pro-Israel organizations. My book isn't receiving institutional support. The issue is that my book is a factual account of a side of Israel a lot of Americans don't see. The debate has been suppressed for a long time. And if you go to the Amazon page of my book right now, you'll see over 60 one-star reviews from non-verified users, all negative, trashing my book, none of whom who have read it. And you'll see smears against me by people closer to the mainstream press who have not read my book either. But I'm really heartened by the good reviews I am getting by veteran Israeli journalists like Akiva Elder, by USC Annenberg School of Communications Director Larry Gross, and by Chris Hedges, who called this the most fearless book about Israel he's ever read.
Well, I thank you very much for being our guest. I'm today with journalist and author Max Blumenthal, who is the author of Goliath, Life and Loathing in Greater Israel. As I mentioned, it was published just last month, available on Amazon and elsewhere. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me.